That bass, that is your signal wherever you are, whenever you are, however you happen to be listening. It's time for DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Linda and SnapTea. They made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2Ns1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who, when he hears the DLC theme, is all about that bass, no treble, Christian Spicer. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm just excited. It's cooled off a little bit here in LA, and I get to finally break out my winter wardrobe, which is exactly the same as my summer wardrobe. It's tough living sometimes.
Yeah, I hear that there may actually be moisture in the skies falling upon us, although I don't believe it until I see it.
No, that's just people crying after they didn't get cast in something. That's not rain.
Yeah, classic Los Angeles. DLC is your downloadable Kanata. It's your downloadable Christian. But this week we are excited because DLC stands for the diva of legacy confirmers, because we got our old pal from Weekend Confirmed, who can now see on game trailers, dropping all the gaming news all the time. And you can even see her, this is awesome, just by walking into a GameStop, because she's on GameStop TV now. One of my favorite people, Miss Andrea Renee. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, I love that diva legacy confirmer. That's pretty good. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Welcome back. She's a returning champ as well, and one of the coolest ladies in gaming. And we're excited to have you here with us today to talk about some stuff. There's not a ton of news, but there's some interesting topics. So I think we should get right into it with story of the week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week, the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that happened in the world of gaming this week. Andrea, what is your pick for this week's story of the week?
Well, the week is just beginning, so I think we're going to hopefully see some more interesting stuff happening. There's been a lot of, talk about, what's happening with Destiny and some other games, but I think Nintendo is really going to bring the big guns. This Thursday, they've announced that they're going to show 50 new things for the Wii U version of Super Smash Brothers, which seems to me like an impossible number of new things.
Considered a thing in this,
really
in this equation?
What really counts as one thing, really?
You've never seen this menu. Yeah. Exclusive to the Wii U. Touch the tablet to start.
Yeah. 50 new sentences on the back of our box. We've got 50 new ones. No, I think they're actually, they're blowing this product out in terms of modes and widgets and gadgets and doohickeys. We know that the core gameplay of Super Smash Brothers is going to be solid. The 3DS version is already selling like gangbusters, and people like Christian are talking about how good it plays. But it sounds like they're going even farther with the Wii version. We're going to see all these new things. There's something that tickles my particular fancy. There's this rumor of a board game mode, which was kind of leaked in a Amazon.com description of the Wii version. And we've got
they have all those amiibos now that they're trying to sell. So you would think that they would try to do some kind of physical integration outside of just, keeping them next to your gamepad. I'm still not quite sure how they're going to work with Smash. I haven't seen like a really detailed breakdown of the amiibos, but I mean, that would be kind of cool if you could use your amiibos as like game pieces somehow.
Well, I think it's going to be more like it's an avatar to maintain your save game and keep the progress you've made on your character. And I'm sure there's going to be lots of little bits and vanity pieces that you can add to your character. And then you can, take that over to your buddy's house and plug him onto his Wii Pad and bring your guy into his game. That's what I suspect, at least.
Have either of you played the 3DS version much?
I downloaded the demo, but haven't played it. I haven't played the full game, no.
So I don't know if this will apply. I'm not certain, but where I speculate it could be handy or neat to have an amiibo is as you unlock things through playing, some of the things you unlock are custom moves. And oftentimes, if you're playing online, you know, you're not allowed to use those. But if you go in, if you create your own game, you can set the rules or whatever. So you can have characters where the move set is different than what you would expect them to be, or the power of some moves is different and others are nerfed, and kind of how you spend these attributes or new moves that you unlock through playing the single player game. And I think it could be really cool and handy if, you know, you had that tied to your amiibo. So then you had your guy, your Mario with, you know, a dash or whatever customizations you make to him. And then you bring him over to your friend's house to play because Smash is so great in that local setting that then you could drop that Mario amiibo in and then you have your custom guy if you're doing a custom fight. I think something like that is a pretty elegant way to solve that problem instead of like going over to their house. Okay, let me open up my save, download my character profile. I mean, obviously it's a memory card, right? That's what it is. But I think it's kind of cool to bring your Mario and be like, you know, put him down and then he's in the game. So hopefully it's something like that. I think that'd be really neat.
Well, there's a lot of speculation in the chat room right now about what that board game mode will be like, if it's going to be like Mario Party or if it's going to have its own thing. And Acorn Mayo in the chat room suggested using amiibo as game pieces on an actual tabletop strategy game would be cool. I think that would be cool. I don't think that's what that is, but I think that would be cool. I suspect that the board game mode is more like, you know, it's going to be like a roll and move style, you know, Mario Party thing where you go forward one space and then it tells you to do something in Smash Brothers in order to progress farther down the path, I'm guessing. But, you know, it's easy to say, the question always people say is, you know, do you want these extra modes in your game? And more is great. It's always, you know, he's going to argue against more. But my version of this question is, you know, Andrea, I know you're a huge Mortal Kombat fan. How many of the non-core modes, of the sort of periphery modes, do you actually play in those kinds of games? Do you want these modes or do you actually play them?
You know, that's a really good point to bring up. I think that those extra modes are really for the hardcore fans who have played through, you know, the main campaign or the head-to-head, and they're looking for another way to keep playing. And then they start to look at some of these extra modes. I mean, we're hearing rumors about a potential what Crazy Hand and Master Hand single-player modes for Smash. Not really sure what those are going to be. And then, you know, Sakurai mentioned on Miiverse about the photo studio, which looks really weird. I think that those definitely are for the people who are like the diehard fans that just want to keep playing and want more content to keep playing. They're not necessarily for the casual or the core fan.
Well, but what about for you? Are you somebody that is excited that there's more different ways to access what is basically the same game? I mean, it's ways to sort of add peripheral stuff to just get you to fight in the fighting mode more, right?
I think I would need to try them, you know, to really give you an accurate answer. For me personally, I really love playing against AI versus playing against actual people, because I get really frustrated when I play against, when I am in PvP modes. Mm-hmm. And so generally when I play Mortal Kombat, I'm doing the story mode where you're playing against the AI, because I find that even if I, you know, like if I get beat, I find I'm able to work out my mistakes on my own better if I don't have somebody taunting me all the time. Right. And that's just a personal preference that I have. I just, PvP just gets me really stressed out.
Well, who knows? Crazy Hand mode might be something taunting you all the time. It might be AI taunting you for all we know. What about you, Christian? Are you somebody that makes use of a lot of different modes in Soul Calibur or in Mortal Kombat, in the games that usually have tons of these side modes?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the concern is always that you hope it doesn't detract from the core game, or, you know, or that doesn't take away. The argument is also used for multiplayer being added to Tomb Raider or whatever, right? You don't want it hurting what you consider the core experience. But
I think it's a little bit of a different situation in this case, right? Because it's not... It's not a it's just adding sort of a different way into what is exactly the same game. It's not a whole different.
Well, no, I mean, it's not necessarily. I mean, oh God, my terminology is bad. And I swear I've put in hours into Smash, but not many hours into this mode. On the 3DS version, there's essentially a mini kind of roguelike or castle explore Smash Run, I think is what it's called. And yeah, I mean, you're fighting people, but there's this huge open map where you can, you know, walk away from someone once an engagement started, and you're unlocking things and powering up as you go. And yes, you're using the same controls, but it's a very different gameplay than standard Smash. I understand what you're saying that, yeah, I mean, it's like if you go through classic mode or tournament through time and you face characters that came out in the 70s, 80s or whatever, it's similar. But I mean, that said, some of these crazy modes, some of the Mortal Kombat and some of these other games, these modes are vastly different. I mean, Mortal Kombat had battle chess, essentially, as one of their other modes. I think they had a kart racer in one of them. And I think it's a good value add for this full price game. I think people would maybe balk at paying $60 for just Mortal Kombat single player and multiplayer now. And I think it is, like Andrea said, it is for, you know, the big fans of the series, because it lets them unlock little perks or, you know, see different things. Where I think it gets confusing in Smash, and I know I could look it up on GameFAQs or something like that, but I feel the 3DS version of Smash doesn't do the best job of telling you how to unlock things, or if you're making progress in unlocking things, or is there progress to be made? You know, Call of Duty has mastered that carrot and stick approach, right? Where it's like 5 more headshots, get this next thing. And when you get close, you can see it. And so many other games use that system too. Or Smash on 3DS, and I'm assuming Wii U too, there are so many game modes. And it's just kind of like, it almost has the same problem that NBA 2K14 had, where it's just like, here you go. And there's just menus. And you're like, what do I want to do? Which right. is not a bad thing, but I don't know, they haven't found a way to make that information friendly yet. But I love the inclusion of more modes, especially when the core game is still so strong.
I think that's true. I tend to not find myself in those other modes in fighting games. I remember being really, really into Soul Calibur back in the day, and it just felt like some of those side things were just taking me away from, you know, when it's like, oh, you have to kill a guy in a specific way, or you have to do a certain thing. Although I'm very intrigued by this board gaming mode. I think that could be really fun just because I love, you know, the whole board gaming aesthetic.
How would you feel if they incentivized you to play those other modes? Would you think that is good, or would you not like that? Let's say they took Adult Link. And Adult Link was only accessible, you could only unlock Adult Link as a playable character by finishing chess mode. Mm-hmm. Would you think that'd be cool because it would make you play chess mode, or would you just be like, dang it, I just want to play as, you know, because like the Marvel versus Capcom 2 approach, the original release of that, you had to play and play and play and do all these different things to get these guys. Is that better or worse?
Well,
God,
you know,
so
I have,
hard. I think it depends on who the person that's locked is, or what the content that's locked is. Because I mean,
Mario,
you can make
Link,
arguments for both
Kong.
Sides. Yeah.
No, I think there's a direct correlation between this and like daily quests in Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm, where in Hearthstone it says play with a warrior deck, three games, win three games with warrior deck, and I'm like, well, warrior deck isn't my main deck. I don't really want to, but I'm gonna because I want that sweet, sweet gold. And it gets me sort of outside my comfort zone and gets me to do, you know, now my warrior deck is way better than it was because I put some time and effort into making it winnable. So I appreciate the pushing you into corners of that gaming experience that you might just recoil from naturally. You might not be excited about naturally. So in that sense, it's like, yeah, well, if you incentivize me to go play other parts of your game, I probably will, and maybe I'll find out that I enjoy those. So yeah, I think that's cool, and I hope that that's how this is structured.
But yeah, I think what Andrew said is spot on, though, too. I mean, I said in jest, but yeah, you couldn't have Smash Brothers and have, like, Link and Mario. You know what I mean? Like, it's that fine line between incentivizing people to play, and even on Hearthstone or, you know, any of these games that do daily challenges, not aggravating them where you open it up and you're like, right, son of a, I don't want to. You get 5 XP if you play this deck you don't have. P.S. You could buy great cards for this deck.
Well, racing games have had a problem with this, right? Because they've run into that problem of like, I bought this game to race sweet cars, and all the sweet cars are behind, you know, experience walls or paywalls. And why can't I just, I want to drive the Ferrari when I open the box. That's what I bought the game for. Why don't you let me have the Ferrari? You know, it is
I want to drive. I want to drive the car that's on the box cover.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been in all the ads. Yeah.
So Christian, what is your story of the week?
Well, that's a great transition. So I tweeted about this with Brian Leahy and Nevin Douglas and a few other people. We kind of got into this debate. So there's no new link that anyone needs to look up on Joystick or IGN or wherever. But today is Monday, October 20th, and Drive Club still does not work, and the PS Plus version is still not out, and there is no news for when it's going to be released. And so a second part of this is I actually got a listener sent me an email. He bought the PSN version and got a full refund from Sony. So I could walk through kind of what he said if other people are looking to do that and, you know, his thoughts and experiences. But what I want to get, Andrea, you and Jeff and, you know, listeners, of course, chime in, or you can tweet at us if you're not listening live or whatever, is, does this matter? Like, to me, and I'm not just trying to just shame Evolution Studios or Drive Club, it's only the most recent example. But I think that gamers, we shouldn't, when I tweeted it, like, you know, it's October 16th, Drive Club still doesn't work. And a lot of people were like, well, no kidding, it's a big online game. And I want to live in a world where we don't expect that. And
we don't expect it not to work, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or that we're not okay with it. I understand making games is hard. I couldn't do it, but like Destiny was pretty great. And obviously, again, there's a gradient, right? Like Destiny, I wasn't able to get in a few games, but I wouldn't demand a refund. Like that I understand. So maybe it's a different scale for different people. But I kind of want to hold Evolution Studios or any other studio that does this, you know, DICE and Battlefield, and not just let them off the hook and do more than just not buy it.
You're so right, Christian. I think the most important thing about not letting Evolution Studios off the hook is not letting PlayStation off the hook. This is their one big first-party AAA console-exclusive game coming this fall for PlayStation, and they completely botched it. I think that if you were to have maybe a smaller studio, something that was third-party, certain mistakes could potentially be forgiven, though I don't think a game of this caliber should ever have these kinds of online problems forgiven at launch. They delayed the game a year. They had all of this extra development time. I mean, just to come out and say, oh, well, we ran into unexpected problems that we didn't get into our beta test, to me is not an acceptable answer for people who paid a lot of money for a game experience that was not complete at launch. I mean, I think that they absolutely owe their customers who've paid for the game a make good.
Yeah, Jeff, yeah. Where are you on this? I mean, Brian Leahy, and I'm trying not to put words in his mouth. This was over the course of a day. We were tweeting back and forth at each other, I think, as we were both watching football. but, you know, his approach was more vote with your wallet. Don't get the game day one. You don't need to be in. You don't need to help them. Games now, you know, we expect it. We know it's going to happen. Just move on. There are other things to play. Don't harp on this. Don't focus on it. And then the other side of it is sometimes gamers actually want to be involved in this. Look at, I think he said this with a joke or a winky face after it, but like look at everybody throwing their money down on early access and alphas and stuff like that on Steam. So how can you pay for that and then complain when the other thing? I think there's a difference. Again, I know Brian's Mondays are crazy. Otherwise, I'd love to get him on to talk about this. But Jeff, where do you fall in this kind of playing a current alpha yourself and having spent some money on Heroes of the Storm? Is that different? The same?
Well, I mean, Blizzard's alphas tend to be most people's final product. But, you know, I definitely think he makes good points in regard to vote with your wallet. I think that is entirely the case. And I think that, you know, where I agree with you and Andrea is that if a company is going to pre-sell something, if a company is going to ask for your money before the game is out, you have a reasonable expectation to assume that what you are paying for when it finally arrives is something that lives up to what they promised. And they do have a responsibility to you know, to make good on some of their promises. I think it is a fine line. It is a gray area there because it shifts back and forth because there is a level of entitlement that happens of stuff that is assumed and not explicitly promised that I think that we don't really – we get a little rabid about complaining about. Sure. But I do feel like there is a line over which Battlefield is an example, SimCity is an example. Games come out and they just are broken. And in that sense, that is not acceptable. And you can't put out a product that's broken and then not expect to have to give refunds. And we talked about this a little last week as far as not being able to return your games. But I see both sides to a certain extent. I don't think one solution is entirely the answer, but it has to be better than this.
So a listener, Josh, when I tweeted out, he tweeted back at me saying that he submitted for a refund. He bought it digitally at midnight, and I asked him to email me. So he sent me some more information if people are looking to do this. He has now successfully received his refund from Sony for buying a digital copy. He bought it at midnight. And he said he decided to actually go for a refund after he saw people on GameFAQs saying they were going to do the same thing. And he said his reasons were that the game felt hollow without the online, and that a lot of what he considered the best cars in the class were gated behind club levels, which because of you couldn't create clubs and access clubs when he was playing were impossible to get. So even if he hunkered down and, you know, grinded out through single player or whatever, he couldn't get some of, like you were saying, right? Like the best car in the game, you can't get because their servers were down. And so even as a single player, like he was interested in solo play, but because he wasn't able to join a club and do these things, the game still to him was broken, right? Or wasn't what was promised. And so he submitted a refund and he got it. And FYI to those that might be interested in doing this, Sony has now, they deactivated his game. So it wasn't as if, oh, he bought digitally, he got a refund and he gets the game. No, he, just like you would do at a store, he no longer has the game. He returned it. And while he can't confirm this, he heard anecdotally from others that some people were denied their refund because apparently they had too many trophies. And I guess that's like you ate 2/3 of your hamburger. You can't send it back. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting that he was able to return it and able to send it back. And so if other people, you know, are maybe looking to do that, maybe we're on the path to doing returns. I know people were able to do it through Origin for some of those EA games. So maybe digital is the way to go because you can return it that way. I haven't heard about anyone taking it back to GameStop, so I don't know how that would go.
Yeah, it's a complicated issue, and it's difficult because there isn't one. Every company doesn't have the same set of principles and same set of rules when it comes to that stuff. And often, who you're really dealing with is the big box stores, is the brick and mortar stores. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, you bought it at Best Buy, but we don't take back any software, regardless of situation. Even if it's in a sealed box, even if you got it as a birthday present, don't want it, don't have the receipt, then you there's no.
Yeah,
no way we're taking it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of the same game. And lastly on this is, this doesn't apply to me, I think, Andrea, or you, Jeff, any of us because of what we do and, you know, our involvement in games. But I think some people may have bought PS Plus because of Drive Club. It was a beautiful looking game, showed the first time they kind of talked about the PS4, and it was a free version was promised, and then it was delayed a year, and then it's still not out. I'm not saying we should demand a refund from Sony because I think PS Plus has provided a lot of value. But I think that's another avenue where it's like Andrew is saying, like, you know, shame on Sony for not having this going right. But this is not right. And if people have paid money for PS Plus and the expectation that they were given this game, that's not cool. And people are saying in the chat, yes, total tip of the hat to Titanfall and Destiny for, I think, being how games, that's a level of game that we should expect, right? Big game, crushing the servers, works almost flawlessly. I want that.
Yeah.
That's what you should be getting for the amount of price that you're paying. I mean, like a $60 price tag up front, and then most of the time you're paying for like an additional $30 to $50 worth of season pass content. You know, I think that, I mean, yeah, it should just work, you know. And it's really kind of puzzling, you know, especially since Drive Club is going up against several other racing games this fall. I mean, now, of course, Project Cars has been delayed, which I think the writing was on the wall for that one. But I mean, going head to head against Forza Horizon 2, you know, which is an Xbox exclusive. I don't know. I think they just, you know, made a lot of mistakes, and I would like to see them come forward and say, you know, sorry, this was really our bad. We really, you know, messed this up. Let's give everybody free access to the game for like a weekend or something, you know, or free DLC for everybody or something. I just feel like a lot of times publishers don't do enough of that when they make a mistake. Yeah. I think another prime example of that is how EA handled Battlefield 4. They were just like, oh yeah, sorry, it's broken. We're working on it.
In the chat here, Space Bob says, developers can put out a game in any state they want. It's the press's responsibility to educate consumers on this, on its state at release. And while I agree with that to a certain extent, it's kind of impossible in the situation where you have people pre-ordering something, getting it on day one, and then that oftentimes that day one experience is what is broken. And there's no way for any kind of coverage to preempt that. You know, we didn't know SimCity was going to have the kind of situation it was going to have on day one. We didn't. You don't know sometimes what's going to happen when the population at large gets its hands on things. So while I agree, and the kind of that's what we're doing here right now, talking about Drive Club in this way. But you know, it's a sticky situation because you don't know. You know, a lot of this coverage comes out with a version of the game that is not exposed to public servers yet, you know, and you don't have any idea whether it's going to hold up under that strain or not. And I think that by and large, coverage of games and even just Twitter, even just average people talking about whether stuff works or not, does that job. It's not that I don't think there's any lacking in there. So it's tough.
Yeah, and I think people are saying, and we can move on. I'm okay moving on whenever others want to after I get this last little bit out.
After you have your say, everybody else can shut up. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. So start with the shutting up and let me have my say. Like, don't buy on day one. I mean, yes, in general, it's always good to wait. Don't buy any Apple product on first revision. Don't buy any car in its first year in release. Don't do, you know, don't eat at a restaurant opening night. Don't do anything. Just stay in bed every day because it's always something's first day. Like, I'm exaggerating, but and someone I wish I knew who said it in the chat, you know, they mentioned, yeah, if you went and bought a TV that was listed as 1080p and you took it home and it was 720p or the picture in picture didn't work, or, you know, you totally would be able to return it. And it's just this weird thing in games where I feel like we've just kind of, like Space Bob says, just don't buy it on day one. No, I should be able to buy it on day one and it should work. I don't think we should have to shift our expectations because we're so used to getting crappy products. That makes me a sad panda. Now everyone else shut up and we'll move on.
Well, I think what you're saying is educate yourself. And you know, the best way to educate yourself is with Linda. Oh, Linda, the sponsor of our show today. Oh, one of the sponsors of our show today. Linda, it's an easy and affordable way to help you learn, which I dig, man. I am honestly a fan of learning. I just dig learning new stuff. And Linda instantly streams thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and lots more. And it's not just some dude on YouTube going, here's how you do it. And it's kind of weird. And you have to like watch three different videos because he's not really clear. I just got married and I tried to I needed to learn how to tie a bow tie because I wanted to wear a real bow tie instead of a clip-on. And I had to watch so many different YouTube videos about how to tie a bow tie. Linda is the opposite of that. Linda is experts who know how to convey something, talk about it in detail, and give you all the information you need in a professional way. This is much higher level than just YouTube videos. They work directly with industry experts and software companies, so they're always timely and they are up to date with the most current versions of software that they're talking about. You're always up to speed. And the courses are broken into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace and learn from start to finish or just find a quick answer to a quick question. Tools include searchable transcripts, playlists, and certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field. And whether you're a beginner or advanced, lynda.com, that's L-Y-N-D-A, L-Y-N-D-A.com, they have courses for all experience levels, and they have apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, and one low monthly price of $25 gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. Premium members can download courses to their iPhone and iPad so that you don't even have to be logged in. You can watch them offline also, which is really cool. And premium members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. For any software you rely on, lynda.com can help you stay current with all software updates. Also, we're going to give you a deal. This is really cool. You can access all the courses on lynda.com, so you can check it out for free for 7 days if you go to lynda.com/DLC. That's LYNDA.com/DLC. Give it a shot. There's lots of really cool stuff to learn about. If you want to like make your website look awesome, they've got tons of web development courses. They've got tons of Photoshop courses so you can make cool graphics. It's really cool. And you're going to be able to try it for 7 days for free. You'll let them know that sponsoring our show was a good idea, which helps us. So go to lynda.com/DLC and try Lynda free for 7 days. We appreciate them supporting the show and hope you do that as well. All right, guys. I guess my story of the week is the fact that Shadow of Mordor is adding a photo mode, which we already saw in whatchamacallit?
Infamous.
Infamous, and I'm thinking of
Last of Us.
The Last of Us Remastered.
Yes, thank you. Really popular in both of those games. Andrea, you mentioned that it's going to be in Smash Brothers, and there you can pose your trophies and take pictures of your dudes that way. I've gone on record before many times and said how I love games like Skyrim that when you have a save game, that it takes a screen capture of where you are at the time that you save your game, and I always try to frame some beautiful mosaic or some beautiful shot. Epic shot of the place I'm in, the vista that I'm looking at. I love that stuff, and I think this is cool. I love that it's catching on. I'm guessing it's a sort of side effect of all the Instagramification of our world. But I'm wondering if you guys dig this. You dig this, Andrea? Is it a cool mode?
I think that it's just another piece of added content. I mean, I'm really glad that it's part of the free update. I actually just downloaded that photo mode in Shadow of Mordor. I haven't begun playing around with it. I think that it's really smart. It's a really smart way, especially for people who are playing on PlayStation 4. That share button makes it so easy to send a screenshot, you know, to the world, you know, through social media. And I think it's a really awesome thing that allows fans to go in and do some really cool, you know, creations and, you know, become their own director of photography, as it were. I think it's cool. I mean, it's not a selling point for me as a gamer. I don't go, oh my gosh, the game has photo mode. I can't wait to play it. Like, it's just like, oh, hey, that's a cool thing.
Well, at the risk of overstating it, which I can see, you know, it is just a nice little added thing, but I think there's something to the idea of making these game worlds feel more inhabited or inhabitable, I guess, that you are not just playing a game inside this world, but you're living in it, and you can take interesting photographs inside it, I think there's this sort of tacit conversation that's happening that gives more validity and importance to these worlds. And I preface that by saying I don't want to overstate it, but I do think that there's an element of that. Am I crazy?
I mean, I don't think you're crazy. I don't think it's quite that. I think that is maybe more akin to like Pokemon Snap, or you know what I mean? Because you're not the character. You are an omnipresent floating camera, which I don't know if that necessarily makes the world seem more lived in, because I think some of the coolest photo mode pictures aren't ones that someone could really take in real life unless you're a war photographer and holy crap, you really got in the thick of it. Like for some of these things.
Well, did you see that article? There was an actual war photographer who went into Last of Us and released a bunch of pictures that he took inside Last of Us. There was this kind of mainstream article. I think it was in Time Online, I want to say. I might be saying that wrong, but I think that's awesome.
No, I think it's totally awesome. And I think it was Brian that was saying whenever, maybe a couple weeks back, it's just, it's, you know, it's like, you brought it up, the, How to Train Your Dragon 2, demo at New York Comic Con, how you put on the Oculus and you were able to, users were able to walk around and do this. And I think that this is kind of like that, where these are 3D modeled and rendered worlds. And so if it doesn't take tons of resources and time and you're able to include one of these photo modes, it's super smart because they're fun. People that enjoy the game are having fun, you know, messing around with it. And then you basically have free art directors putting out postcard ads for your game that look awesome. I mean, the guy that did a trailer, a Last of Us trailer, just using the photo mode and kind of the Ken Burns effect, the war photographer guy, some of the sunset pictures of of Infamous. Like, you get incredible, awesome things like that are great pictures that I want to look at that could make a BuzzFeed list of best pictures in game. And all of a sudden your game is getting more buzz because you're able to put in this photo mode. I mean, that's win-win, right?
Yeah. Yeah. On the other end of the spectrum, we had EVE Vegas 2014 that happened this week, which is a convention all about the game EVE Online, which anybody that doesn't know anything about EVE, it's a massive space MMO that has these incredible communities that are built up because basically players have complete control over everything, the economy, the politics, everything. And there's this really interesting talk that I read about that Massively did a piece about, where the head of one of the largest gaming coalitions, is what the sort of the guilds are called in EVE Online, talked about how much work it is for them to maintain these coalitions because they're so large and there's so many moving pieces and they're in charge of so much of the game world, so many logistics in the game world, that they literally built a piece of custom software called a Region Commander that is a giant spreadsheet that lets them manage the logistics of this game world. So here we have a game that's often criticized as being a spreadsheet, and they actually built a front end for it that lets them operate it like a spreadsheet, and they're putting in tons of work hours. And one of the, you know, the sort of editorial commentary on this article says it's got everything. The only thing missing is a punch card and a paycheck. And my question to you guys is, why do we do this? Why do we do this? I understand people – what's the difference between this and work? Why are we willing to put in this much work for our fun? You guys have any theories?
I'm not.
You're not.
I don't know about you guys, but that's just – it's taking the – I don't want to say – maybe obsession is a loaded word to use, but I mean, wow. It's just – it's a level of detail that I don't understand. I don't think I've ever loved something that much that I would devote that much time to it. And I love a lot of things. Like, and I am a big fan of a lot of things, but I mean, this is a whole nother level.
You do devote a lot of time to those things. I don't think it's the time that's the issue. It's the way the time is spent, right? It's like, because you'll spend 100 hours in Mass Effect, right? You'll be leveling up your Call of Duty character, whatever it is. But I think when it transitions over into stuff that's more akin to work, but then there's a lot of things like MMOs that I've played hundreds of hours in, and I would say dozens of those hours weren't even enjoyable because I was grinding, doing something that felt like work to get to the fun. I don't know. I don't think there's one answer to this, but it's something to think about because when that line shifts all the way to the side of middle management, you're like the manager of this video game world and you're uncompensated. Like, there is – but, you know, but people manage their softball team, you know, and they have to make the scheduling and do all that stuff. And so maybe that's not that different from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just fun, and different people find different things fun. You know, my mother-in-law really enjoys gardening and she's really good at it. And from like what I think most people would consider pleasurable gardening, like just little things to, you know, what people do, what gardeners and lawn mowing services do, like just weeding, like huge flower beds. And like, she likes that order and getting in there and getting her hands dirty and doing that. Or you know, different people find different things enjoyable. And I think it's not work because you're choosing to do it. And I think to some extent, because you're not getting paid for it, it's not that that's what makes it enjoyable. I'm sure getting paid for it. But you know what I mean? It's not, no one has to do it. So the fact that you're doing it and you're diving into it and you're spending all this time with it is because you've created this larger world or this larger fiction, or it's the thing that helps you find your zen and find your chi and center yourself. And you kind of just go through this thing while you have revenge on in the background, and you know what I mean? And you're going through the first couple seasons of Arrow or whatever you're doing while you're doing this thing.
I think you're also having effect. You're having an effect on the world, and I think we sort of need that. I think that's part of what makes it enjoyable. You know, you're having an effect on the world that you want.
Well, but in gaming, it's a fake effect.
Well, no, it's a real effect on a fake world, is what it is. It's a real effect. But it's just a fictional world. But it's a fictional world that has meaning and is enjoyable.
Yeah, because that's affecting someone else, another real person that's also playing in this fictional world. I mean, I guess I understand it, and I think it's easy to, you know, lull at it and roll your eyes, be like, why are people doing this? It's just work. But like, I know dudes that go and play pickup basketball 3 days a week. That's someone else's work. That's Kobe Bryant's work.
That's true.
They're not getting a paycheck for it. They find it fun. So I think it's the same thing. And when you say the basketball example, it's like, well, yeah, that's fun. Yeah. So is this. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean you just like, well, that's dumb. Those guys are idiots. No, man. Just be accepting and realize that you would never want to do that ever, ever, ever. But they find it awesome.
A Game Breaker in the chat says, this is how I feel about Destiny. I'm grinding to get weapons, then grinding to upgrade the weapons, meaning I'm spending hours upon hours doing PvP or doing the same 5-strike missions over and over again. I'm not having fun, but somehow I can't stop doing it. Interesting.
So clearly he's having fun. I mean, you would stop playing if it wasn't fun anymore. But I think the problem is that people, for some reason, don't want to admit that they're having fun grinding in Destiny. It's like, it's almost like you can't openly say, yeah, the game is really awesome because it has such noticeable flaws. It's almost like you don't feel comfortable admitting that you like a flawed game.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how you guys feel about that situation, but like, it's okay to like the game even though the game's not perfect. Like, that's totally okay.
Yeah, you like Assassin's Creed.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
Andrea, unfortunately, has to leave a little early, so I want to skip to a couple of things that I definitely want to get her opinion on, one of which is the fact that evidently there's this porn site that wants to sponsor an esports team, which I want to know just kind of what you guys think about this. Andrea, are you okay with that, or do you think that video games are – you know, aimed at an age group that really shouldn't have sponsors that are aimed at a different age group?
I don't think a porn site should be allowed to sponsor anything that's public. I mean, you would never see a porn site sponsoring a regular professional sports team, like a basketball, baseball, football. Like, that would just never be allowed. It's too family friendly. And I think, you know, games are no different. I think the esports community has to do a lot of work to prove that they belong in that professional sporting community at large, if they even want that. And I think that's absolutely the wrong direction to go. I mean, pornography is something that is meant for adults and only for adults. And while a lot of these video games that we play are also meant just for adults, I think we can agree that with parental guidance, some of these mature rated games can be appropriate for children, as long as they, you know, do have a parent there explaining what's happening in the game to them. Porn is not that thing, right? Like, you don't like watch porn with your parents and they're like, okay, well, this is okay, little Jimmy, as long as, you know, I'm not even going to list an example because I'm already getting uncomfortable talking about it. But no, like, to me, any esports team that would accept sponsorship dollars from a porn site is asking to be dropped from, you know, professional contention. I mean, nobody can take you seriously. I mean, it's ridiculous. Don't do it.
What about you, Christian? What do you think?
For a while, well, beer still sponsors NASCAR. Alcohol can destroy lives and families. So can porn. The porn industry is filled of dirty, dark, horrible things that fill up a lot of it. There are some that is intelligent, smart adults making decisions that they, and they're very proud of their job and they love what they do and they would do nothing else. And that's great. More power to them. But there is a darkness to it and a slave trade that happens for a lot of the stuff that is put out onto the internet. So porn is a very serious issue and, you know, not to get too heavy into it. A very large website that does this stuff had a billboard up in Times Square that was taken down, and it was a suitable for work billboard, like anything else. You know, it had their name on it, but it was maybe cheeky, but not any more cheeky than a Trojan.
Didn't they actually run a contest for people to come up with ads that would be able to be publicly displayed? I think they did. Crowdsourced it, yeah.
Yep, and some were at bus stops, and then they put up one huge one in Times Square that then was very quickly taken down. I don't know if they didn't have permission or whatever, but to some extent, I feel like these things, whether or not that site had permission to do it or they did it knowing that it would be objected to and taken down, and I think kudos, failure on my part for saying their name. I shouldn't have done that. But like to you, Jeff, kudos for not saying the name of this site that wanted to sponsor this esports team, because I feel like sometimes these things are often done not in the genuine interest of sponsoring a team, but you put out a press release saying you want to do this and now you're getting free sponsorship, so to speak, because you'll get people talking about it. For instance, when, you know, a runner up in a Miss America pageant or a Mr. Universe pageant or something like that, oftentimes adult sites will say, hey, come do a video for us. You know, we'll give you $1,000 or $1 million or whatever it is. Or, you know, someone gets eliminated from The Bachelor or Bachelorette. You hear about these things. And while I'm sure these companies would pay that money to get that thing, I think oftentimes they're just trying to get in the public discussion because so-and-so is eliminated from The Bachelor and here we are trying to be in it. Or Miss Kentucky was robbed. Well, you want to see all of Miss Kentucky? Or, you know, Mr. Nebraska sure is buff. And so I think that's what this is. I don't think any esports team would be foolish enough to take the money, whether or not it's right or wrong. It's a hot button issue that I don't think is worth any dollar. Well, that's not true. It's worth some dollar amount, but it's worth most dollar amounts because you will, like Andrea said, I agree. You walk into this thing with a chip on your shoulder or, you know, a dark cloud hanging over you and having to explain this, and you can't just sit there and play, as Reggie would say, play the games.
Yeah, the most interesting thing about this story to me is how they this is based on a article on Polygon that went up today as of this recording. The interesting thing is that they're trying to figure out ways that they can design jerseys with their logo on it without it being their logo. And they have a mock-up one that they've said they are not using, which doesn't even say the name of the site, just has their logo. So it's sort of like this inside thing to people that already know what to look for. And they say they're not using that. They're doing something that's even more farther away from the actual logo. And that, to me, it doesn't make any sense. If you're going to sponsor something, don't you want people to know what it is without already knowing what it is? And it just feels like these weird hoops to jump through to be the wink, wink, nudge, nudge in an industry that admittedly is wink, wink, nudge, nudge about a lot of things. But yeah, it's a sticky thing. Bad choice of words. It's a...
I was waiting for someone to make that reference.
I just feel like... I think, Christian, you said a really great thing, or maybe it was Andrea that said a really great thing about the fact that real sports are there to be family-friendly. They're there to be the thing that your five-year-old watches with grandpa. And I would love for video games to be there as well. And to sort of, yes, many of the esports games are M-rated games. So in that sense, you're already limiting your audience. But I wish that we could embrace a wholesome atmosphere. I think that would make gaming feel much more open to a larger audience. And I think that's what we're all looking for.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And just for clarification in the chat, because some people were mentioning, I'm not saying that the government should ban it or there should be any rules against it. I definitely don't think that. I think that, you know, anyone who wants to accept sponsorship should be able to. But I think from a professional and like reputation standpoint, it would be unwise of any esports team to accept that kind of sponsorship. But I'm not saying there should be like a rule or legislation banning it.
Yeah. I'll say one last thing, and we can leave it there. And that is just to quote Supernova in the chat. I think this is true, although it opens a whole can of worms we don't need to get into. But it says, stupid thing is, porn is bad, but killing everyone in a game is fine for 14-year-olds.
Well, and I wanted to address that briefly, too. And I think hopefully I said it clearly when I was talking about it. Porn between consenting adults is totally different than, unfortunately, what makes up a lot of porn is sex. I don't know numbers, but it is a very real thing that sex trafficking and sex slaves and all of that stuff is a very real thing. And that is bad. That is not, I unequivocally, Christian Spicer's opinion, that is bad.
Yeah.
Porn between sending adults into business, totally different thing. Well, chat room people listening. Yeah. Don't put your
words. This wasn't a referendum on porn. We weren't discussing the merits or lack thereof of pornography. We were just talking about it in the context of sponsoring a thing that I think a lot of kids watch. Okay. Well, we're not going to jump all the way to a story of the week, but I mean, to the playlist, because there's a couple more stories I wanted to hit on. But Andrea has to leave soon, so I want to hear you see that you've played a bunch of games. I want to hear what you're playing, and hear you talk about finishing the story in both Shadow of Mordor and Destiny.
Yeah, so I have a couple games that are still sitting on my shelf that I'm putting off playing because I'm too afraid. Both Alien Isolation and The Evil Within are in my house, but I haven't played either of them yet because I'm afraid. So I finished the story mode in Shadow of Mordor, and it was funny because I didn't intend to like do the final mission. I was just, you know, running around doing stuff, and I had been working in the Nemesis system for quite some time, so I decided to go back to the main story campaign, and then all of a sudden I like got to the final boss battle, and I was like, oh, I'm here. This is it. I was a little disappointed by how abruptly that transition happened, but I still really, really love that game. One of my favorite games of the year so far, you know, next to Wolfenstein, you know, and Destiny and Infamous. Those are probably like my favorites so far this year, but I really like it. I, for some reason, I don't have a problem with the gratuitous violence that's in that game, and I think it's because they're monsters. I never look at the orcs or uruks as even being remotely good, even though the voice acting and the dialogue that you get from the NPCs in the world is superb. I mean, I feel like the orcs have more personality than any of the actual human characters do. And that's a testament, of course, you know, to the team at Monolith for really creating these really unique and interesting characters. But you guys have been playing Mordor as well, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. I know, Christian, you've been playing a lot, right?
I have finished the story. It's amazing.
Yeah, I have not finished the story because I'm slow and also Heroes of the Storm. But yes, definitely. Again, I think this is probably the biggest surprise of the year. Although I will say again that I called it before E3. Just want to say that. But this is it's great. I'm so happy that even just to say that this license is still vital and interesting and you can do cool stuff with Lord of the Rings is great to say and great to hear and great to see. But I think we all have said over multiple weeks that we hope everybody rips off this Nemesis system and it becomes just sort of standard in games from now on. I think it's such a huge leap forward in what we can expect from feeling immersed in a world. It's great.
Yeah, because then I want to see what Monolith adds, right? That's the beauty. I'm not saying, and I think you agree, it's not like we want every game to be the same, but if everyone starts adopting this system, then what's the next cool thing that gets added,
and
right?
And iterating on that system and figuring out ways to implement it that weren't what they did, but that, you know, take it forward and modify it and find something cool, more cool to do. Yeah, for sure. What about Destiny? Andrew, before I let you go, I got to hear your feelings on Destiny because Christian and I are famously divided on Destiny.
Well, I think that it's such a very fun shooter. Like the shooting mechanics are so solid.
Definitely.
And so on point that it makes it fun. But man, it is so repetitive to the point that I was doing some patrol missions on the Cosmodrome yesterday to get a bounty. And I literally ran by the same two Vandals and Captain five times in a span of probably 5 minutes and killed them over and over again because they just kept respawning. And it's indicative of a larger problem that there's just these instanced areas. And I really wish they had made it more open world than it actually is. Like looking off into the distance and seeing these really cool vistas and these areas that you're like, wow, that looks really cool over there. I want to go check that out. But you can't. It's really frustrating as a player, especially since the promise of Destiny was so big. And I think that it's great that they are continuing to do, you know, weekly or, you know, weekly strikes and weekly story things and stuff in the Crucible. But I just wish that it had been a more in-depth experience at launch and that we didn't have to wait for the first expansion and then thus pay extra money to get more from the story. But I'm concerned that even the expansions aren't going to really diversify what we've already seen. I mean, the enemy archetypes, you know, it's already been criticized that they're very much like Halo archetypes. I mean, we're not really seeing anything groundbreaking from the sci-fi genre perspective, but it's still fun. That's the weird thing about it. And I think that's because Bungie really knows how to make a first-person shooter. And because it's so well built mechanically, you can kind of overlook all of the other flaws.
Yeah, more fun than it is good. That was my review. I know you're a huge Borderlands fan. Are you not playing the pre-sequel?
Oh my God, I started playing it yesterday. It's so good.
Yeah? Okay. Well,
it's so good. Like, if you like Borderlands at all, I mean, I cannot recommend it enough. It's the characters, like getting to see these people from a different perspective, going back to the world. I am just a little disappointed that it doesn't look as good, you know, because it's on 360 and PS3. I'm hoping that they're going to put out a next-gen port next year. I would love to play this on Xbox One or PS4, but I'm loving it. I mean, it's Borderlands. I'm playing as Claptrap. And it was so funny when you're in the character selection screen. I mean, they go through all of the characters, you know, you can see Wilhelm, Nisha, and Athena. And then they give you these sub menus when you select Claptrap. And they're like, oh, hey, sorry. We see that you selected Claptrap. Are you sure you didn't make a mistake? Did you? You can totally go back and pick somebody else. And I was like, no, I want to pick Claptrap. And they're like, oh, wait, maybe you made another mistake. Are you sure? Because this means you're going to have to play with Claptrap the whole game.
That's great.
And they gave you three menus like that, and it was cracking me up. And I was like, this is what's so great about Borderlands. It's so funny and cheeky, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. I mean, and speaking of solid shooting mechanics, you know, that's really, you know, on point as well. And man, the gravity play on the moon adds a whole nother dynamic that's super challenging in a really fun way. I've been really enjoying my time with it.
That's great.
So I don't know if you played Arkham Origins at all, but, you know, that's the non-Rocksteady developed game. This is the non-core Borderlands team developed Borderlands game. Does it feel stopgappy at all? Still great. Like, I loved Origins. I know, Jeff, you enjoyed parts of it, but I don't think liked it as much as me. Right. I realized what Arkham Origins was, stopgappy, but I love Batman and I love that combat. So I was like, get it. If you're like me, it's fun. Does the pre-sequel kind of have a little bit of that to it, or do you think it's just great?
Well, they worked pretty closely with Gearbox on, you know, the story. And I don't know what the developer responsibilities were divided up, you know, as far as like the gameplay mechanics. It feels pretty much identical to, you know, Borderlands 2 mechanics wise. I have noticed a little bit of like hitching and like some like a glitches here and there, but nothing that's been game breaking for me. Nothing that's pulled me out of the experience enough for me to like maybe tweet about it or be like, oh, well, this really sucks. You know, maybe they should patch this. I haven't come across anything like that so far. I haven't really taken the time to go and look in the forums and see what people are saying about it. But I mean, so far I've had nothing but fun.
That's awesome.
Well, we have had nothing but fun having you on the show this week. We're sad that you have to leave early, but we're even more sad that you moved away from our town and you are now in the San Francisco area. But we appreciate you being on this week, Andrea. Thanks so much.
Well, the 49ers need someone to fill out that team, and Andrea had to go out
there. How dare you?
Don't even talk injuries. About that massacre that happened yesterday. Oh, well, thank
Only
you guys
injuries.
So much for having me. I really appreciate it. You know, my show on Game Trailers GT News is relaunching this week, so we've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks. So please, you know, check us out on GameTrailers.com or on YouTube.com/GT News. And then, as Jeff mentioned, you know,
just
wave
walk,
at me when you're in a GameStop.
That's she's right there talking right to you. Yeah, that we really.
But thanks again for having me, and enjoy the rest of the show. And I look forward to listening to you guys. And thank you, everyone in the chat. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it's just at Andrea Renee.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon, Andrea. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bummer that she had to go early, but let's jump into a couple other stories that I had to skip over so we could get some of her opinions on that stuff.
Yes, sir.
One of which is I wanted to bring up the discussion of last week's episode because anybody that hasn't checked out our subreddit over at reddit.com/r/5x5 is missing out on a really cool community that's burgeoning and is doing great. And I really appreciate the guys setting up a weekly discussion thread of the episode, and we've got some really cool discussion of last week's show. Of course, guys, I know I probably didn't sound like I know, but I'm assuming Christian knows as well. We know that P in 1080p doesn't stand for pixel. We know it stands for progressive scan. I was being tongue in cheek when we were talking about that. But there's, you know, a lot of discussion back and forth about whether 900p versus 1080p is important or not. And the part of the discussion that I want to hit on, I think, is the interesting thing that a couple of users got into about, I think it was Machiker and A.G. McLeod. They were talking about this idea that is prettying up things important. And they got into a discussion of maybe it would be more important to make a game look like a last generation GTA, but have every single building explorable. And, you know, where I fall down on this is, or come down on this is, I really do want things to get closer and closer to a reality or a artful reality. And
sorry, just to clarify this aspect, because I think that goes either way. One way is every building explorable, but looking like crap if that's necessity is closer to reality. But do you mean from a visual standpoint?
I'm saying that
do you mean accessible?
You know, I do want games to look better. I do want a next generation game to look closer to what it would be like if I turned on the television. I think that would be neat.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to gaming and virtual reality and all that stuff and creating a very believable world for me to be a part of. So I do want graphics to improve. I don't think we've gotten to a point where I can just say, as Garnett famously did on a We Can Confirmed long ago, we can be done. The graphics are good enough. I don't think that's the case. However, I do love this idea of making more deeper worlds rather than prettier worlds. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on a show, but I had this fantasy about a game engine that wasn't just a graphics engine, that was a city block, right? Just one small city block, but that was – it was so – realistically depicted, that it was so detailed that every single item in that city block, every piece of garbage, every newspaper on a table, every pencil in a drawer, everything in every room in every building in just one city block was so realistically rendered that you could then take that and apply it to different genres. And you have characters that live on that block, and you have the shooter that it takes place on that block, and you have the role-playing game that takes place on that block, and you have the, you know, point-and-click adventure game. And it's just this really, truly rendered universe that then gets applied to different kinds of games. I know it'll never happen, but I think that would be really, really cool. I thought I'd bring it up. Your take, Christian Spicer.
I mean, so what we're talking about is how, and I think they said it poorly, their PR speak has been bad, but kind of what Ubisoft has been saying about Assassin's Creed Unity, right? Yeah, pretty is great. They one say that Unity is gorgeous and pretty and will be one of the prettiest games on current gen systems. But they also say that, you know, they spent effort and resources on huge crowds because I think that's an important part of the French Revolution and a more robust AI. And, you know, you can't do all things. Computers aren't able to do everything, right? You can't have photorealism and 100 characters on screen with independent AI routines or whatever, whatever, whatever. And so they kind of focus some of the resources on that. And you know, it's tough. I'm not sure where I fall on it. I think I will always choose art direction over pure photorealism. And what that means to me is I will always take, it doesn't need to be this style, it doesn't need to be cel shaded, but I will take Wind Waker over Twilight Princess. Twilight Princess was a beautiful game when it came out, but it just kind of tried to look real. And I think now, looking back, it looks dated. Whereas Wind Waker, I think the original version is still beautiful. The HD version is more beautiful. But I also think that's an easier thing to HDify because it's simpler, cleaner lines. And if you look at something like, I'm trying to think of, you know, architecture or design, there are things that are classics that have clean lines and for whatever reason look great today. A 67 Mustang, I think, or if you're a Chevy person, a 67 SS or Camaro, whatever you want to say, right? Beautiful cars still look great today. And then we built the Aztec. And Priuses aren't exactly beautiful cars. And we have homes that are just amazing craftsmen or whatever, you know, Spanish style homes. And then you have McMansions that people are living in that aren't beautiful or whatever, whatever, whatever. And I think games can be like that too. So photorealism isn't what's super important to me. I want a clear vision and a good art direction and a style and a sense and a feel that I'm in this world. And I think I can get, like you talked about in photo mode, I think I can get the feeling that I'm in this world, that I'm living in this world, and that this is a very real place. Even if it's cartoony, it doesn't need to be depressing. I can get that through less than photorealistic graphics. So I think I would err to that than with awesome AI. Or with being able to go in, if I can see it, you know, the Skyrim presentation, you can go to that mountain. I can go in that building. I can get in every car. Every person has a unique AI system. Every person has the nemesis system. You know, I can fly as high as I want. I can go into the deepest ocean and only die because the pressure crushes the crappy submarine I have. Like, that's my ideal game world. And I think even if we're capable of doing news photorealism, I would always err on the side of still great art direction. Because even movies and cinema, where it's just, even no special effects, I love style in my cinema and in my film and in my television. So I think that's super important. So I'm okay taking a backseat to graphics, pure graphics, to get some of those other things. Of course, gameplay is always still important, but that's where I fall on that point, I guess.
Right. Really interesting discussion. I encourage people to go to the Reddit and talk in this week's discussion thread. We'll make this much more part of the show going forward. If people have interesting conversations, I want to bring them up. So thanks to the guys for making that happen over at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Also, thanks to our other sponsor, which is Snap Tea. This is a really cool thing. This is the first time they've sponsored our show. I'm really excited about it because I didn't know about it before. And I'm really into this idea. Snap Tea is an app, right? You download it on your phone, and it's about t-shirts. It's about designing t-shirts. If you like designing t-shirts or creating really just unique things, this is, you got to listen up because this is really cool. It lets you create one-of-a-kind shirts with basically any design you want, and they have all these options to choose from. It's basically, they say it's endless options. It's a lot. I was checking it out today. And even better than that, you can import your own designs to use and create your own shirts. So any kind of idea you have, you can make the shirt. But it also works as an app where you can follow your favorite artists and buy their designs. You can even favorite certain designs and see what designs other users have favorited, so that you can kind of find really cool shirts. It's so awesome. You're not limited to just what one store has, because it's users that basically, it's the socializing of t-shirt designs. I think clever, fun, unique t-shirts are cool. You know, you go to PAX and you're so proud of that t-shirt that you got, and then like six other dudes are wearing it. It's like, oh, well, I guess this was the T-Fury or whatever. This was the shirt of the day on some website. Snap Tea lets you get really specific, design your own, or follow really cool artists that have awesome T-shirts. And there's, you can get inspirations from pre-designed shirts, and they have this thing called the Snap Tee Locker that lets you just kind of browse random shirts, and it's free. All you have to do is go to snaptee.co/getapp or just search for the app in the App Store or the Google Play Store. And the best part is that when you purchase your own t-shirt, the one that you've decided, if you enter our promo code, which is 5x5DLC, that's the number 5BY, the number 5DLC, you'll get 10% off. So that's anything that isn't a hoodie or a sweatshirt. So use our promo code, 5x5DLC, get you 10% off. There's really cool t-shirts. Just download the app for free. Create your own shirt. It's awesome. It's so easy. You could do it right now while you're listening to the show if you want. In fact, I'm doing it right now. Downloading. Thank you to Snap Tee. Again, that promo code 5x5DLC. We appreciate them sponsoring the show. All right, Christian, should we go to the playlist, or do you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
The only other story that I think could be interesting is just as an FYI, our listeners probably know, but if you're a Candy Crush person, the unofficial sequel / non-sequel / if you're sick of playing Candy Crush Saga, here's something else to play. Candy Crush Soda Saga is out on Facebook now and maybe on mobile. I haven't checked, but mobile very soon as well. It's a huge game.
It's called Saga.
Yeah. Saga is a video game company that no longer makes consoles.
Saga!
Saga. I think it's called Hearthstone, actually. That's what I think it's called.
That's funny.
And if you're stoked for Far Cry 4, I would say don't buy the season pass in advance, my personal opinion. But the information of what it is out, and there's something for everybody. So you can take a look at that. I don't need to read it for you. But, there's some single player, some what sounds like a horde mode, content. And that's out. The info's out and stuff like that. So just little bits that when you're sitting at your computer, you can look up and peruse.
Cool. Let's get to the playlist.
Yeah. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing
this week? Tell us on the playlist. We already heard what Andrea was playing, but this is the part of the show where I love to hear what you guys are playing. If you're listening live right now, which you can do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, you can call in at 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. We already have some people on the line, so I'm going to go right to a call before I even check in with you, Christian. Let's see what 661 is playing. What's your name, where are you calling from, and what's on your playlist?
Hi, this is Michael from Amsterdam calling again. I've been playing Smash Brothers for the past few weeks, mostly. And last week, I picked up Fantasy Life on my 3DS as well, and I've been playing the Bayonetta 2 demo, which, FYI, smoothest animation in an action game that I've ever seen.
Wow, that's cool. So you are playing Smash Brothers on your DS. Are you also going to get it for the Wii? And if they had come out on the same day, would you have still gotten it on the DS?
Yes, I'm going to get it on the Wii U. I've already pre-ordered it. I actually pre-ordered the, because here in Europe, we're not getting the same bundle that you guys are getting in the States that comes with a GameCube controller. We're just getting a bundle that comes with the adapter. Still getting it because I still have GameCube controllers. And even if they came out on the same day, that's actually a tough question. I'm not sure if I would.
Interesting.
I think I still would, but not on the same day. I think I would get like the 3DS one a bit later, because I'm pretty sure that most of my friends would be playing on the Wii U, so I would get that one first, and then maybe later pick up the 3DS version so that at least I can practice on the go.
Christian, do you have a Wii U? I can't remember.
I do not currently own a Wii U. If there's a nice holiday bundle, I will take the plunge, but I have not. I do not own one in my home. That's correct.
Are you going to get one for the Smash Bros? I know you're a Smash Bros fan.
I am a Smash Bros fan. Smash alone will not be enough. I'll need some form of price drop or a nice priced bundle. I almost took the plunge. I'd mentioned it on the show, of course. Target had a really nice sale on one when Mario Kart 8 came out. I'm hoping for a Black Friday. I don't mind doing doorbusters. I like getting up at stupid times in the hour and hanging out with friends in front of stores. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for. You're an owner. That's funny. We're like a house divided, right? Like you're an owner, but not a Smash guy.
Right.
I like Smash and I don't own. Maybe I'll just borrow your console.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Although I am interested I probably will pick it up. Although I just don't. Yeah, you're right in calling me not a Smash guy. I'm just not a Smash guy. But I want to check it out. It just seems so good. Every time I played it at an event, it just was so good.
So here's the solution then. I'll borrow your console.
Yeah.
I'll get the game. Yeah. And then you can check it out and you'll come over and we'll play it together, which is how you should check it out because that's what we'll have fun.
I like it.
And then I'll play all the other features alone.
This is a good plan. I like this plan. What do you?
And then I keep your Wii U forever.
What's on your playlist now?
So I too finished the story of Mordor, Shadow of Mordor. I did not 100% or platinum the game I played on my PS4. No spoilers at all. I'm not going to spoil it. Not that I think there's a huge story to spoil. I think it's pretty apparent from as the game opens, you know exactly what you're going to do in the game. But I won't spoil it at all. Some people have complained about how the game ends and maybe you're able to level up your character to become too powerful and it becomes less rewarding. I actually found the end part of the story game to be very satisfying. I did feel powerful, and because of things that happened in the game, you have some things going for you, and I thought that was cool. I kind of like that approach where I don't know if it's a Shakespearean arc. It's not, because that, you know, often ends in tragedy. But I think there's something cool about, like, you have your biggest, hardest battle maybe isn't the very end, where I often feel like video games that is the case, right? You get to the last boss and it's like, this is gonna be epic. I like there still being something cool and epic, but I also kind of like you come to the end of the thing and yeah, you're the dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it was cool.
Kind of reminds me of Red Dead Redemption, where like the last boss battle wasn't the hardest fight.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I like that in games. I mean, Red Dead's ending is certainly different. Great ending, but certainly different. But so I think if you've heard some negativity about people's ending to the game, maybe that's put you off from playing it. I would say I still wholly recommend the game. I know, Jeff, you just look at it crying out of one eye and smiling out of the other while you play Heroes of the Storm.
It's not easy to smile out of an eye, but yes, it's true.
Well, the twinkle, the little pocket. So I would say keep playing it. And then I'm not trying to just like bash a game, but it's Halloween time and people are changing their Twitter names to, like, I think Anthony Carboni is like Anthony Carboni, or you know, people get into that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to play. I don't have Alien, and I don't enjoy scary games enough to plunk down the cash for it to play it. But I went back and revisited Walking Dead Season 2 because I felt it left me feeling
season boo.
See, that's exactly. And then because of that, I actually went back and played through a good chunk of season one again to see if I was just kind of over the game. You know, sometimes you remember something being awesome and then you're like, the second one didn't live up to expectations. And you're like, oh, wait, no, it was just because it was the second one. I stand by my opinion that the second one's characters and storytelling and the investment you have with the characters just pales in comparison to season one, even knowing season one's story. And playing through the first, I think I got halfway through chapter 3 again of season one, the way they introduce characters and the way you're made to make them feel. And so these are minor season one spoilers. You know, we've talked about it on Week and Confirmed, when you're given food and you're only able to give it to one person, and each person you have a reason to give it to each person, and you know you're going to anger the other, and you knew these characters at this point and you wanted to help them both. You wanted X to break candy bar in half if you could. Moments like that were so powerful in season two. And if you disagree, I'd love to hear, you know, Jeff, I think you said you're waiting for it all to be out. Yeah. It's all out. Yeah. So you can take the plunge. But I just feel like it misses those moments in the decision trees that it puts you in, that are like those tough decisions just feel like, oh, well, you've been playing probably for an hour now. Here's a tough decision. Here's a gray area decision. And season one is so, so good. And so that's kind of those are my Halloween games. Do you do that? Do you participate in like seasonal gaming?
Sometimes. I get behind doing some fun, scary stuff for the scary time of year. That's cool. You know, I was playing Alien Isolation, but I got to admit, where is he? Somebody in the chat room totally nailed me. Brown Bomber said, we all know when Jeff gets home, he just plays Heroes of the Storm and then feels bad for not playing anything else. That is absolutely the truth. I am super feeling guilty about doing the show and not being able to like have opinions on other things, but all I want to do is play Heroes of the Storm. That'll change as more of my kind of games come out, when Dragon Age is coming out and Sunset Overdrive is coming out, and you know, I'm getting into that stuff. But the season is not enough for me to stick with Alien Isolation, even though I dig the game and I think it's well done. It's not how I want to spend my leisure time. You know, I don't enjoy putting myself in that state, which the game does exceedingly well. It is atmospheric and terrifying and very, very, very tense. So I have a lot of compliments for that game. I have no desire to play an Evil Within. Zero. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. No, I mean, I loved Resident Evil 1, 2, 3. I really got into those. Evil Within, it's... Shadow of Mordor is grotesque in that it's hyper-violent and the orcs and urks look hideous or whatever, but like Evil Within from my time at E3 with it and stuff is a type of hideous and horrendous and horrific that does not appeal to me. I hear people are loving it, but yeah, it is not. I will say loudly and apologize to those that want to hear about it. It is not my cup of tea.
Well, our producer Zach was showing me a video of him playing Five Nights at Freddy's this week, which looks, I don't know if you know about that game, Christian. I just learned about it from Zach, and that game is basically you're running like a Chuck E. Cheese at night, and all of the animatronic figures in the Chuck E. Cheese come to life, and they think you are a broken animatronic figure because you're made of flesh and not animatronics, and you know, want to kill you. But it's really got this tense kind of look to it that I just watched a video of him playing it, but it's you're like checking in on security cameras and having to look over. I just love the idea of a game set in a Chuck E. Cheese type location, because it's never been done that I know of, and I think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating and potentially terrifying. And it's also on your phone. You can play it on your phone, as Brown Bomber is pointing out in the chat right now.
So you can hear a coworker at work sitting in the toilet just go,
ah! Yeah, everything all right in there?
I'm fine. Good thing I was on the toilet, because I just scared the crap out of myself.
Let's check in with our old buddy. I think it's Matthew on the line here from 850. Is Matthew, are you – what are you playing, buddy? What's on your playlist?
I have actually, I guess I should give a quick setup. Last week for 48 hours, GOG, Good Old Games, gave away Alien vs. Predator 2000 to do some testing on their end. But they gave away the full game for testing multiplayer, and I've just been playing that online, an old-school, fast-paced, asymmetric shooter.
Yeah, that's a good game that I remember digging back in the day. I much prefer my aliens singular and terrifying than paired with predators and actiony, but that's just me. Christian, did you ever play that game?
Oh yeah, it was great. It was one of those games that took multiplayer world by storm when it came out, but it's, I don't even know when it's old. I mean, is it 90s old or is it
2000?
No, 2000, yeah. Like actual 2000.
Yeah. So basically 9 days.
I said 90s.
That's what I said too. Basically,
I thought you said 9 days. I was like, you jerk.
Nineties.
The gaming world does move fast. 9 days old, and Christian says it's old news.
Awesome. All right, let's get to tabletop time.
Tabletop time. Tabletop time. Right now. Right now.
I will say, one of the things I want more feedback on is if people would like me to talk more about Heroes of the Storm or less, because I feel like it's less, which is why I haven't mentioned much of it. But if people are interested in hearing about that in more detail, or, you know, I feel like I'm actually playing a game that I'm getting better at, which is such a fun thing. And it's so interesting that, you know, more people have been playing it, and now I played with a couple of people this week who are just starting, and I'm like, oh, they're okay. They haven't learned all the things that I've learned, and so it's really interesting to get better at a game. Anyway,
I'll tell you what I want to hear is occasional check-ins, yes, not just week after week gushing. Like if things change, if things are different, or after you've learned something new, how you're applying it, things like that I think are interesting. What bores me about MOBA discussion is it's, oh, I'm still doing this. It's like, yeah, whatever. But like new different things or new changes or experiences that you've had, great, right. Do it. Who cares? Let's do it.
No, it's more like, it's more like saying I played pick a basketball again this week. Like we don't need to. You don't need to describe the game right. of basketball, but there are fun stories that can happen, you know, in the context of playing that game that I think are interesting. Anyway, we are in cool. tabletop time, and we got some fun feedback on the subreddit about that. CursorTN on subreddit wants to talk about King of New York, and which is the sequel to King of Tokyo. And King of New York was supposed to come out this week. I think I saw that it got delayed until the first week of November as far as Amazon orders go. But it's a game from Yellow that is a wonderful, wonderful update to a wonderful, wonderful game. It's a kind of a Yahtzee game where you're trying – it's like a King of the Hill type of thing where you're playing giant monsters in a city and you need to occupy a spot to gain points. And when you're occupying that spot, you are vulnerable to all the other players, but you can attack all the other players as a group as well. So you have to – it's this push your luck element of how long do I stay on the hill and try to gain points before they knock me down too low where I risk dying and possibly being knocked out of the game. So he wanted us to talk about that and the fact that that game is coming out. And also, I brought it up because my nephew turns 10 this week. Actually, yesterday was his birthday. And my sister contacted me and said, you know what he would love for his birthday is a board game. But I have no idea what board games are good. And I sent King of Tokyo to them. I think that is a perfect game for that age group. It is easy to understand. There's very few rules. It's quick. The game plays fast. You probably play three or four in a row. It's got giant monsters that are colorful and look really cool and stand up on the table. So kids dig it. Rolling dice is fun. Rolling dice that have claws on them is even more fun. So easy to recommend for that set if you're looking for a gift or a thing for someone younger. But it's also fun for adults.
Can I ask a quick question? How do you feel about pre-ordering board games versus pre-ordering video games? Is there a difference or is it kind of the same?
It's just as risky. And you know, board games have become such a huge Kickstarter phenomenon. The board gaming industry has been completely taken over by Kickstarter to a large extent. And so there's a lot of risk involved in Kickstartering a board game because oftentimes those types of things run into real snags as far as manufacturing the bits and shipping everything. And there's been a lot of really unfortunate events. There was this game that was kind of a Monopoly variant that somebody was doing called it's like a Cthulhu Monopoly. It's called like the Day – I can't remember the title right now. It's slipping my mind. But anyway, it was a really huge deal that they weren't going to give the game to people. And these guys, the creators came in and took back the rights and fulfilled all the Kickstarter orders, which was really cool. But it's a tough thing. You know, Kickstartering a board game or pre-ordering a board game, I tend to not do, which is rough because unlike video games,
right.
If you aren't one of the first 500 to do it, chances are you're going to have to wait a year, you know, not like a couple of weeks, yeah. A year or two.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like if there was board game stop, like they could not have any unless you pre-ordered. Whereas video games, you can download it.
Right.
Like they have
right.
it. But that's why I was wondering if like you really want a game, is it worth it to take that risk? Because yeah, there's few in existence.
I have pre-ordered a couple of games in my time, but most of the time, even games that I'm 98% sure I'm going to love and that come from reputable game companies, I will wait because it's not like that game is going to be any less up to date when I get it. You know, it's not like I'm going to have to, even 2 years down the line, it's not like, oh, the technology has progressed beyond this game. It's still going to be a fun game to play later. You know, it will last. So there's plenty yeah. of games that, that I kind of, some of the, there's some games that I kick myself and I'm like, oh, I totally could have kickstarted that and I would have it already and everybody's talking about how amazing it is. But yeah. There's another thread on Reddit from Capped Box who says he way overpaid on eBay to get Dead of Winter. It's an example of what you're talking about, Christian. Upon listening to all the positive feedback on our show, and totally worth it. He said it was so much fun.
That's not overpaying, then. That's perfect.
Exactly. He said, I honestly can't believe how much content there is. Tons of different survivors, a ton of main objectives, lots of individual objectives, and a huge stack of crossover crossroads cards. He feels like he could play this game 50 times and it'd be different every time. He also has a story when they died horribly when Sparky the stunt dog went into the gas station to try and get fuel, but only ended up finding a switchblade before being overrun by zombies. So pour one out for Sparky the stunt dog. Yes, I did. I'm so happy with Dead of Winter. I've played it a few more times as well. It is, I think it's a strong contender for Board Game of the Year. It's for Plaid Hat Games. And one game that I raved about. I would not, however, advise anybody to overpay on eBay for it or for anything, to be quite honest. But this contributor, Capped Box, says he can't recommend the game enough. So there you go. I, however, this week played a game, a new game that I've been wanting to play for a long time called Splendor. I think Jeff Engelstein recommended this when he was on our show. It's a game that I bought specifically to play with my wife, because, which is a question I get a lot. People are like, oh, what games can I play with my wife? I knew this game played well with two players. You can play up to four, but it plays well with two players. It's quick, under 30-minute play time. You could probably even go less than that. And easy to explain. It's about trading in gems, which is a theme that, you know, is pretty – it's not orcs and demons and stuff that can be – off-putting to certain people. The components are very high quality. So basically the idea is that you have this grid of cards that are these development cards that you can purchase for gems. And when you can acquire gems on your turn, or you can purchase a card. So you have a choice. It's kind of like Ticket to Ride in that way. You can either acquire the resource or you can use the resource, one or the other. So you can acquire gems on your turn, and then you use those gems to buy these development cards, and the development cards themselves give you bonus gems. So if you own a development card that, for example, has a ruby on top, it will allow you in future purchases to have to spend one fewer ruby than you would have to. So you're building up this empire of these developments that give you bonuses to make all your subsequent purchases cheaper, so you can buy more and more expensive cards, building up higher and higher resources of gems to the point where you eventually can get the attention of a patron who will then come into your camp. You can grab the patron card and get extra points. And you're just kind of acquiring points. It plays really fast. It plays really, really well. My wife really dug it. And I can't say enough about the cool components. The gems themselves aren't gem-shaped. They're discs, but they're like casino chips. They're thick and they're weighty and they feel awesome in your hand. And when you plunk down some gems to buy something, it lands with weight and heft and it feels awesome. And yet the game is pretty inexpensive. I think I got it for about $20 on Amazon. So this is a real, real winner in my opinion, and something that works great with two players and plays. I haven't played it with four yet. We've just played with my wife, but she really dug it, and we're going to play it lots more often.
I was at a stand-up show, and you often hear this at shows or whatever, because you're trying to keep the energy up, right? And the host will be like, hey, guys, we got a great show for you. It's going to be quick. We're going to be in and out of here in an hour. We're going to have lots of laughs. We're going to get out of here. And then someone commented, like, you know, only there are very few things where someone advertises how quickly you're going to not be doing it as a good thing. And it's funny listening to you describe this board game. You're like, it's great. It's really quick. Like, you'll just play, and then you'll be done. You don't need to play it anymore. It's super good. It's, like, again, one of those things that you describe as, like, dude, this hamburger's the best. It's one bite. It's done. You don't have to eat any more hamburger. It's the best burger. Like,
well, you know, I think
I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah, sometimes it's a hard sell to say, okay, we're going to play this game. It's probably going to take at least 20 minutes just to understand what the hell's going on. And then it's probably two more hours after that of playing and you still might lose. You know, it's like, it's a hard sell sometimes. I happen to love those kinds of games, but it's great to have some in your arsenal in your game library that you can take out and, you know, they call them fillers, games that you can play between other games or for a crowd that doesn't quite have the patience or attention span. Not that my wife falls into that category, but I think, you know, she's just sort of getting into the hobby. And so I'm finding games that will hook her and that we can play multiple times in a row rather than one extended long campaign that takes a long time to explain. We have a couple people in the chat room who were talking about Risen said he played Den of Winter twice on Saturday and lost both times and has yet to play a game where he wins. That's the rough thing about those co-op games is oftentimes you will lose more than you win in those games. Do you have a problem with that? Christian, are you somebody that feels like it was wasted time if the whole group goes down in a fiery blaze of death?
No, I mean, no, as long as the process is fun. And I think the difference, I have problems with that in video games sometimes if you lose your save. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Then you have to redo it. But if you had won, the experience is still over. It's just a different experience, if that makes sense. So I'm okay, because it's not as if you beat that game you would then get start on the new game. Like, that's the kind of thing where that aggravates me, but I'm okay with it. Does it bother you?
I think I mentioned on a previous episode how I'm falling out of love. I think it was when I was reviewing Dead of Winter. I'm falling a little bit out of love with co-op games, and I think that might have part to do with it. However, I will say there are some of the best times I've had playing co-op games is when we've lost. It's when there's this crazy last thing and it's we're being about to be overwhelmed and if we have to have one shot at it and oh, we didn't make it. But it makes for a great story because we almost had it. And it's kind of like what our commentator was saying, Cap Box, where he was saying that Sparky the stunt dog, you know, all Sparky had to do was find one thing of fuel and we would have survived to another day, and yet all he found was a switchblade. And, you know, dog can't use a switchblade. Come on, it's ridiculous.
But it gives you those moments that when you do win, it's like the idea that if you are in sports, right, you never want to beat your rival 100-0. You want to beat your rival 1-0. Because right. Losing 100-0 stinks, but losing 0-1, that's the worst feeling ever. Well, so if you do get that,
what you want is awesome. What you want is, oh my God, I'm going to win. No, I'm going to lose. No, I'm going to win. No, I'm going to lose. Oh, I'm going to really lose. I won. You know, that's why we do. I mean, that's why we watch sports. That's what drama is. And I think F. Bergero in the chat room has it correctly when he says that co-ops have to be hard or it's not fun if it's too easy. And that's really the truth. It's the hardest thing in the world to I think balance that experience so that, yeah, a lot of times you're not going to win because that makes the win valuable. It's what Dan Trachtenberg used to call the good suck. You know, it's like things have to be grueling and difficult for you to feel good when they go your way. And co-op games have a difficult balance that way. And it's the details and the dramatic fluctuations of whether you're going to win or lose that really make them exciting. Also, Risen is telling me it's Risen. So thanks, Risen, for the correction. any other things you wanted to hit on, Christian? It's fun kind of just being the two of us hanging out for once.
It's like the first couple of eps. It's good. I'm in a happy place. I have a parting gift we can do. And then, you know, I think the way you close the show should be listened to and reminded every week, and it's especially true this week, like all others. I don't think it needs any more focus than that. But don't be a jerk. You know, that's how I would.
Yeah, I want to add to that too. A lot of people in the chat and on Twitter were asking us to talk about the sort of crap that's been going on in the game community, and I am just not interested in giving more time to it, other than to underscore what Christian just said, and also to say more. More voices are better, even if voices aren't saying what you want them to say. If a review isn't what you think, that should be better. That should be applauded. I hate homogeny. I hate forced consensus. It's always better when more voices are contributing to a conversation than fewer. And if you are in the camp of trying to limit whose voices are being heard, then I think you're in the wrong camp. And be inclusive, be welcoming, and be good. All right, what are you going to be doing this week, Christian? We're gonna hit a parting gift before we go, but I'd love to hear what you're up to this week.
Yeah, so we started, if you're in LA, every Wednesday at 10 p.m. at the Clubhouse, which is in Hollywood area, or I guess, yeah, maybe Los Feliz. It's on Vermont between Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset. It's a fun little stand-up show I co-host with Jess Lane, who people might know. She was on a UCB Herald team for years and just an amazing performer. She's actually out screening a pilot in New York right now. It's Wednesdays at 10 p.m. It's completely free, tons of free parking, always do that. And then bigger things to put on your calendar if you want to do them. I'm part of an awesome charity show November 30th in San Diego. And then there's plenty of time for this to go horribly wrong, but it looks like December 2nd, I believe that's a Tuesday, December 2nd, I'll be recording my first album.
Whoa!
Also, what? I'll be doing that down in San Diego.
I didn't even know you sang. So,
well, it's just me singing Celine Dion covers. So I only songs that Celine Dion covered, I then cover them, and it's called Pulling the Covers Over the Covers with Christian Spicer.
I can't wait to hear your Celine Dion voice.
Well, no, I'm doing my voice of her voice doing someone else's song.
Brilliant. It's a niche.
It's December 2nd.
You found yourself a niche.
I plan on doing it. It will be at Lestat's, if you know where that is.
I want to go to your recording just so I can scream out in the middle, I'm on a recording!
Well, you just did. Congratulations. This podcast is a recording, so we killed that bird with that stone. So you can look for that. It probably won't drop until 2015, because let's be honest, after I record it, I need to go in and then record people laughing.
Right.
So I can put the two, because, never the two shall meet in real life. But no, I'm super excited. Hopefully it goes well.
You're like the WB announcing all of your releases into 2020.
But I do it in a financial release, so it's going to be a profitable year. And by the way, here's a movie, so stay buff, Ben Affleck, because we got you locked down through 2020. What about you, Jeff? What's going on?
Well, my huge, I'm on the Slash Filmcast. We just did an episode about Fury, the new Brad Pitt movie, which was really good, and I also reviewed the Judge in that episode. And We Have Concerns. We Have Concerns is a fun podcast that you should listen to with myself and Anthony Carboni. It's at wehaveconcerns.com. Give it a shot. I recommend downloading the Spider House episode, which is perfect for this time of year. It might scare you.
No, thank
it might
you.
Make you laugh. It's pretty fun. Also, the one that dropped today, Who's the Robot Boss, is a pretty fun one. Let's give the people a parting gift. What do you have to recommend, Christian?
So I mentioned it. Well, it's not really gardening. I'd say it's gardening. Wash your car by hand. I know we're in a drought, so do it in a water-wise way if you can, or place it recycles water. But
this
I love
is a
it.
West
I love doing
Coast
that.
Centric recommendation.
Well, yeah. If you're on the East Coast, I don't know.
Your car's already frozen.
I don't live. I don't live in Wisconsin. I don't know. It's fun. I just did it, and I did it at a place, where they'd use recycled water or whatever. But it's one of those things, like you were talking about. It's apropos that it's on this episode, because that's work, But I really like it.
Oh, interesting.
I listen to a podcast and make my car nice and shiny.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Interesting recommendation. I have a music recommendation for the people. One of my favorite bands is this band called Stars. They've been around a long time. They have an unfortunate name because when you search for Stars, there's 1,000 things that come up on iTunes that aren't them. But they have a new album that just dropped called No One Is Lost, which is fantastic, as are all of their albums. I'm really into them. They're sort of synth poppy, which is kind of my MO. Boy, that new album's great, and their previous albums are all fantastic as well. They've been around a long time, 10 years, I think, still going strong as a really fantastic, really hip, cool, give you a nice dance beat kind of band. So check it out. Stars, No One Is Lost. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We thank Andrea for being on, even though she had to leave a little early. We thank our sponsors for this episode, Snap T and Linda. We thank all of you for listening, everybody that called in and participated in the chat. Thanks for hanging out with us, and thank you for downloading the show. We're doing our best here at DLC to maintain a strong, positive, fun place that you can talk about video games. And we hope you'll tell your friends about it, maybe rate us on iTunes and help spread the word, because community is, I think, what is in jeopardy right now. Community. It's not video games that are under attack. It's community. It's places to talk about them and places to celebrate them. And we're doing our best to keep a community that's fun and positive. I appreciate the guys in the subreddit being fun and positive and interesting. So thanks for that. Until next week, for Christian Spicer and myself, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.